You're listening to STB Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mike Lyles, and welcome to this episode of STP Radio. I will be your host today for this next installment of a series of interviews that we are conducting with several speakers attending our upcoming spring STP conference. STP Con is going to be in San Francisco, California, from April the 4th through the 7th this year. So be sure to check out stpcon.com, where you can learn more about the conference, the speakers, our special events, our conference pricing. And if you join now, you can receive our early bird discount. So don't wait too long. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Both of our handles there are at Software Test Pro. And now I will introduce you to our guest today, Jim Hazen. Welcome to STP Radio, Jim.
Thanks, Mike. Good to be here.
So I think a lot of people know you already, but just for the audience, can you tell us a little bit of history about you and what your background is and a little bit about what you're doing now?
I started in the industry back in 1987 and got involved with testing in 88 and have been doing it since then. As a part of that length of time over the last almost 30 years, I've worked quite a bit with the tools in the work of software testing, specifically test automation tools. I worked with a lot of the first generation tools back in the early mid 90s, and over the last 15, 16 years, done a lot of consulting work for use of tools for automated testing and performance testing.
I did do some research on you, and I noticed that you started your career in the 80s. But I noticed you have a degree in zoology. So how does one get into testing profession from zoology? And is there any relation of that to what you're doing now?
Yeah, it does. My formal degree is in zoology. And I got into working with computers as a part of that because I've always had a mathematical orientation to that type of studies. In my classes, I was better at the mathematics and things like that, working on models for population biology, genetics. If you asked me to identify a frog and give its taxonomic name, I would just look at you and say, it's a toad. So, and where I went to school at Colorado State, I was fortunate enough to be there when their CS department got the National Science Foundation grants for supercomputing. So a lot of influx and influence on mathematics and computers there. And I got in with a couple of professors and went through their classes. So that's how I got in. And when I graduated school, I was looking to combine my zoology and biology background with computers and started working in the medical industry for imaging systems in hospitals for nuclear medicine.
Well, I just thought it was probably because it's like Wild Kingdom to work in an IT environment around testers and developers and the business world. So
yeah, there are times you definitely have to be the lion tamer or the African guide because you're going through a lot of jungle.
Yeah. Right. Well, I noticed that takes us to a discussion on your email address is actually California Kelp Diver. And I noticed that one of your interests is scuba diving and underwater photography.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that experience?
Yeah, that relates to why I got my degree in zoology. When I was very young, growing up here in Colorado, I watched a lot of Jacques Cousteau's undersea adventures and always wanted to get into it and thought marine biology was my thing and didn't exactly pan out. But when I got my first job and moved out to California, I traded my skis for scuba equipment. And then a couple years later, I got my instructor's card. So for 15 years, I was a scuba instructor, but also I got into underwater photography and just really enjoyed it. So that's how my email address became Cal Kelp Diver.
I looked at a recommendation for you, and I noticed that someone said, and this is a pretty bold statement, if you need to stand up automation in your company, this is your guy. And they say, this is your guy in bold letters. And I noticed that your profile says that you've started a lot of QA groups, and I've been part of that myself. I know the struggles involved. So what is it that you do that makes people say that, and what obstacles do you see in setting up a new testing group or automation team?
Yeah, because early in my career, I was involved with going into companies and starting their testing function. I mean, the first company where I really did software testing, that's exactly what we did. We stood up the testing function, myself and another guy, and we grew it to about 5 or 6 people there. And then went to another company after that and started off with myself and another person. And a year later, we had 60 plus people in test. And that's because we, you know, the second company, they really grew their product stable. And we had to just add people. I mean, they were adding developers left and right. We had to add testers left and right to keep up. That experience, and then later on implementing an automation tool on one project, I really learned that there's a lot of front-end work that you have to do to get even to the point where you can build or start building your framework and your scripts. You know, you just can't take a tool, drop it in, and as I like to say, auto-magically have everything happen. It's that front-end work that really, I guess you could say, makes things count and gives you some modicum of success, is that automation is software development unto itself. So you've got to do the planning, you've got to do the design, implementation, and maintenance and testing of it to make sure it's going to work right. I mean, the tools we're using drive the testing, or some people like to call it the checking. It's a tool only. I mean, it's the skills and the knowledge behind the tool that really make things work. And that's what I try and bring to companies and clients and say, hey, look, you know, here's the overall forest for the trees picture of how you implement this stuff and the benefits you can get out of it. It's not going to do everything for you. You need to be smart about it. But if we sit down and map things out and have a schedule of what we're building out and work towards that, you're going to have a higher chance of success than somebody who's just going to try and grab a tool, automate everything, and watch it fail.
Absolutely. That leads us to the workshop that you're doing for us at STP, mm-hmm. and the practical process of implementation of test automation. So how do you feel you're going to structure that class? And can you tell us a little bit about what you're going to speak on there in the workshop?
Sure. Yeah. The workshop itself, the first couple parts of it are going to be going over all this front end work, sitting down and scoping it out, building a schedule for implementation, going around to the different groups to get them to understand and work with the other groups and explain to them and get them to understand what it is you're trying to do and the involvement they have in it too. You know, it's just not the test people doing the automation. There's other people that need to be involved so that things can get set up so you can actually build it and implement it. And then also working with management to say, hey, look, let's set realistic expectations and goals and work towards those. You know, again, it's the software development philosophy of making sure that you're going to get set up to do things and have a chance to succeed. You don't want to paint yourself in a corner from day one. And as a part of that too, we'll go over some of the different types of frameworks that you can implement. And that's going to be pretty much tool agnostic. I mean, you can do this for any tool. And in a lot of situations, you can do it for a lot of different products. And then the last part, we're actually going to have some hands-on experience working with a specific tool and implementing part of what you would call a hybrid framework, where you have components and keywords combined. And this is for the GUI level. And even some of that can be applied to testing at the services level and things like that, because services are designed so that, yeah, you have certain calls to them, you pass certain data, so you can actually build components that interact with those services and then build the actual tests around it to drive it all. So there's going to be some lecture, but there will be hands-on with it.
So how does that relate to the test automation pyramid? And it kind of leads us to a session that you're doing called Demystifying the Test Automation Pyramid. How does that roll together, and what are your thoughts there?
The workshop itself is going to cover probably the first two parts of it. And like I said, specifically, we're going to use the GUI example because that's the easiest for people to do. And that's where a lot of people exist in their work right now as far as general software testers. I mean, we do need to go deeper. We need to do, as another person in the industry says, shift our testing left to the left and get more involved earlier on, which is a good thing. We need to do that. We can't wait till the end and just try and do it all in a short period of time. It's the building process. But in relation to the other presentation, Demystifying the Automation Pyramid, I met Mike Cohn, who was the originator of that years ago. And when he started formulating that stuff, I talked a little bit to him because he was talking about my automation background. His whole premise is that get testing started sooner and do it at a level where the tests are more atomic and more focused. So unit testing is doing those lower level tests, and they are faster. They are more directed. They are a little bit more maintainable. Thus, if you have that running as part of continuous integration in your development process, you're finding things sooner. So a lot of the simple, you know, what I like to call stupid bugs that flow downstream get found sooner. So what they do is that they deliver a more robust and reliable piece of software to the later phases of testing so that you're not having to do a lot of cursory rework. So the presentation goes through that, but also it talks about what are some of the misconceptions that have come out of it and how we need to take a little bit different look at it. And I'll cover that in the presentation, but as with anything, when it gets introduced, everybody jumps onto it and it starts to grow in a life of its own. And there's always misconceptions that comes a part of it. I'm trying to correct some of those.
Yeah, I think one of the misconceptions that I've seen through the years leading automation teams and working with automation groups and the executives around that is lots of times they get caught up in this, I need X percent coverage of the manual cases, or I need X number of test cases to be automated before we're done. And that's done to them. Done is not, you know, the benefits that you can get from having automation in place. So have you seen that almost everywhere?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that the pyramid has kind of caused become, in my opinion, a bit of a problem point, because that perception and misconception, in my opinion, is that it's causing people to not focus on what they need to do with automation, which is automate what makes sense and to not try and do everything. I mean, there are some things that you cannot or should not automate. I've recently had someone at work tell me they wanted 100% automate their testing, and I just went, "Good luck." You know, it's never going to happen. I mean, you can't do anything 100%, and that's not being pessimistic. I mean, it's just a realism of it is you have time and resource constraints. So with testing, you know, what Kim Kaner and James Bach and those guys talk about is risk based testing,
right?
You have to figure out what your risks are and focus on them and get them minimized so that you get the best possible product out there. And also, too, as part of that, you know, everybody thinks if we automate 100%, we automate all of, we cover all of our testing, which is not true.
Right.
And some companies are relying on automation solely for their testing when they shouldn't. I mean, automation is a tool. Recently, Michael Bolton and James Bach put out a paper about how these are just tools. And you have to use them appropriately and knowingly. And I support that.
Yes, completely. And, you know, I think that's a great thing. And I'm begging folks to sign up for your workshop and for your session, because you've been with us a long time. You've been doing a lot of things with STP and with STPCon. And so I think folks can really benefit from your experience. And when I say that, people are, you know, people speak of you as the veteran of software testing trenches. I saw that in your profile on LinkedIn. And
yeah.
the one thing that stood out to me was you said, I can talk in the languages of development and management. And I also noticed that you wrote an article in 2011 for us at STP called How to Sell Testing. So how do you blend that talking the language and selling the value of testing? And what roadblocks have you seen in doing that?
Well, that relates back to typically what people inside and outside of the industry view of software development, both developers and testers. You know, we're these guys who sit in dark rooms and pound on keyboards for hours on end and drink Mountain Dew and Red Bull and order Domino's pizza all the time. And that's not true. I mean, we need to get out of that mold and be able to go talk to other groups so they understand what it is we're trying to do, what we need, and how it benefits them. So when I did that paper and did the presentation at STPCon, it was recognize who your audience is and speak to them in those terms. So for development, you're not there to beat them up. They always worry like, oh, Tess is here to beat me up. That's not true. We're the guys there to protect you. You know, we're helping you make better software. We're helping you to build a better product. And as far as management, you know, we're helping to protect their investment. We talk about money terms as far as, you know, here, look, if you do this testing and we can get things in reliable shape, there's both soft dollar and hard dollar impacts. Hard dollar is revenue. Soft dollar is reputation. I mean, the software is very fickle. Early in my career, I worked for a couple of commercial companies where, you know, if you released a bad product, your users and the press let you know, and you got beat up for it. And that had soft dollar impacts as far as your credibility, and then it affected your bottom line because you're not selling product. Going to the marketing and salespeople and saying, hey, look, you know, what features do you need? What does it need to be able to do? And for the end users is, hey, look, you know, we have gone through this product. We have found these issues. We have fixed these. These are still outstanding. Can you live with them or not? If not, it's like, okay, what can we do to help you to get them done before the release? So, I mean, there's a diagram I draw for people where test QA is in the middle of a big circle. You're like the hub on a wheel, and everybody is on the outside. You're in the middle of it all.
Exactly.
And you need to be able to communicate between those groups and yourself, because we're all in the same boat. And we need to be rowing in the same direction, or else we're going to go nowhere fast. And that's what I was trying to do as a part of that. And that's why I say I'm able to talk to management, because as part of my consulting work, I have to go in and sell services. I have to sell them on what we're going to do, set schedules, and then work with the development and test teams and say, hey, look, here's what we're going to do, and get people to get together and agree upon that, so we can all just march towards the same finish line. So it's, you're not just pounding on the software. There's a lot of other aspects that you have to be involved with. And that's part of what that was pushing.
Do you think with mobile and, you know, the world's different than it was 20 years ago. 20 years ago, we didn't have to worry about .com and mobile and wearables and all of that. Do you think that that's changing how testing is perceived and how we have to sell it?
A little bit, but, you know, the thing is, some of the things that are old are new again. And the reason I say that is because the mobile world, what they're dealing with is configuration and compatibility problems. And that's what we dealt with 20, 25 years ago with DOS and early versions of Windows.
Yes.
So these different devices and the versions of the OS or whatever else it is, you have to figure out what's your main focus within that. I mean, it's like when .com was happening, there was questions of compatibility with different versions of browsers. Back then you had IE, Netscape, and a couple of others, but then you had differences in their versions themselves. So you had to map out these matrices of the operating system, the browser version, and what you're trying to do. And you look at these things and they look daunting, but if you said, look, let's look at the top five of them that everybody's using. And there were statistics out there that you could get from different sources saying, here's the browser that's being used the most. Okay, let's focus on that and go down the next three. So like when I was working with some of the commercial products, we had different versions of DOS that we had to worry about. We had different device drivers we had to worry about as far as interacting with printers and things like that. So we would map that out and then do our testing according to that. And with mobile and the other devices like that, the type of work is the same. It's just that the scale and the speed is a lot more intense than it was back then. I mean, it was intense then, but even more so now because it's so quickly changing.
Yeah, well, I think the talking heads had it right when they said same as it ever was, right? From once in a lifetime.
Yeah, I was going to say the talking heads, same as it ever was.
Yes. So it's been great, Jim. I'm really looking forward to having you with us. And I have one more question, and that is, what is the one thing or something that you're looking the most forward to at this STP Con in San Francisco in April?
I'm looking forward to the workshop the most because I really want to put forward a class that is going to give people some of the tools they need to be successful with automation. And like I said, I've been working with these tools since the early 90s. And my goal, and especially what I've done with past conferences talking about automation, is to help both individuals and companies succeed with it, because I think it's a good tool. Like I said, it is a tool. It's not going to be the end-all solution, but as with any tool, you've got to use it properly and knowingly. And that's what I want to try to give people is that set of information and tools that I have so that they can go and succeed with it, because we still have a high failure rate of implementation of automation and tools.
Correct.
I mean, it's been hovering up around the 70% range for the last 15 plus years. Why is because, you know, there's still a lot of misconceptions and people rush in, and it's like, what I want to do is give them that front end stuff so that they can have a better chance of being in a 30% of success than a 70% of failure.
Exactly. Well, Jim, it's been a pleasure. I thank you for taking your time and spending time with us today. And everyone out there, once again, stpcon.com, get out there, look at the program. We've got Jim, we've got tons of folks in automation. If you're an automation person, you are going to love this conference. If you're in leadership or performance or any other aspect, we also have tracks for that as well. And we really, really look forward to seeing you guys in San Francisco in April. Please come out, check the website out, get signed up, and get the early bird. Thank you so much, Jim.
Sure. Thank you, Mike. And I look forward to seeing people at STPCon in San Francisco.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of STP Radio. Stay tuned for more episodes, and don't forget to check out stpcon.com to learn more about the conference being held at the Westin San Francisco Airport Hotel, April 4th through 7th.